Good morning. Good to see you all here. My message this morning is entitled, Growing a Global Identity, a Hermeneutic of Love. Now, since this talk is about one of the tools that can help us grow a more global identity, I'd like to begin by repeating the last part of last week's talk about the importance of developing a global identity. Hopefully, those who may have missed it will be able to pick up a little bit of what we concluded, and others might be gently reminded. As I once said in a message about tribalism, and as we've heard, you can substitute nationalism for tribalism here, a wise, spiritually developed person is one who is aware of the negative aspects of tribalism and resists it. While tribalism was once an evolutionary necessity for survival, in modern times, it is actually quite ridiculous because it's so immature and rooted in the illusion that some people are more valuable than others. And I guess that's more than just ridiculous. It's downright dangerous. And it's not just dangerous, it's unnecessarily dangerous. You see, the origins of tribalism and likewise nationalism are very real. At one time, it was very necessary, but in the modern world, belonging to a tribe is no longer essential for staying alive. As a matter of fact, in modern times, tribalism, nationalism frequently has the opposite impact on life. From gangs to hate crimes and even including politically motivated anti-Muslim movements, tribalism and nationalism are costing the world lives. Now, healthy spiritualism recognizes the connectedness of us all and frequently comes with a set of standards, a set of measurements by which we can assess if we're treating the world and others in a way that fully recognizes their value and our mutual connectedness. The good news is, with the appropriate education, or awareness, and tools, we are all more than capable of eliminating negative tribalism, nationalism identities in our lives, and moving to what's a healthier, more modern outlook, a more global identity. So, today, I'd like to talk about one of those things that can help us begin to nurture a more global identity. Because of the title of today's message, you can probably clearly realize that thing is a hermeneutic of love. Now, if what exactly a hermeneutic of love is, well, a little less clearer to you, don't worry. We will get to that. But first, let's do a bit of a sort of sociological reflection on the society that we live in. You know, in many ways, the United States was founded on rugged individualism. One of the 19th century's leading political scientists and historians, particularly when it came to democracy in America, was a gentleman by the name of Alexis de Tocqueville. And one of his primary observations of America was the primacy of rugged individualism within our culture. He believed this individualism was both the U.S.'s greatest strength as well as its greatest weakness. It was his belief, now get this, it was his belief that this rugged individualism would ultimately be the undoing of our culture and society as well as our experiment in democratic governance. So, reading modern headlines, I can't help but maybe think he was maybe exactly right. But for this talk, though, I'm not very interested in the impact of that reality on politics. I'm actually very curious about its impact on society. Now, ultimately, society is made up of multiple communities, and communities aren't unlike tribes. This is a group of people who form a bond around a central idea or issue. There was a time, obviously, when that idea might have been simply to stay alive. Now that idea might be something as simple as believing that a particular area of the city is one of the best parts to live in. And there are, of course, typically multiple ideas within any community which the bond is formed through. But the point that I'm getting to is that for most of humanity's long history, we have been a people of community. We are not only pulled towards it as a people, but we have a tendency to thrive in healthy communities. And that's why I brought up America's case of rugged individualism. It would seem that as a society, and remember societies are made up of multiple communities, it would seem that as a society, we are becoming increasingly adverse to the idea of needing to be a part of a healthy community. For example, when Hillary Clinton released her book, It Takes a Village, she actually became a bit of a target for comedians, politicians, pundits who made fun of the perspective suggested by the book's title. And you might remember that Barack Obama's suggestion that there are no self-made businesses or leaders did not go over very well. And he was attacked for not valuing the individualistic nature of American capitalism. It seems like that as a society, we tend to not like hearing that we need the help and support of others in order to be successful. It would seem that we want to believe that we can solve our own problems without the assistance of others. The rugged individualism that the nation was partly founded on has come to head to head with the long time reality that humans are drawn to be in community. Now, for a community to be healthy, it needs compassion. At times, being part of a community just requires an awareness of and a placing the needs and concerns of others ahead of our own. And let me tell you, compassion is hard work. To some degree, it requires the sacrifice of an individual's wants and needs at times. Of course, the problem then is that our rugged individualism is so prevalent in our society, it runs counter to the compassion needed for a healthy community. As I said a few moments ago, it seems like that as a society, we tend to not like hearing that we need the help and support of others in order to be successful. It would seem that we want to believe that we can solve our own problems without the assistance of others. But to continue that thought, we also seem to have reversed that thinking. And far too many of us expect others to do exactly the same. Not only that, but those who do expect that of others tend to do so without any regard to the systemic issues that may make it a nearly impossible task to do. That kind of rugged individualism lays for a fertile foundation for the growth of narcissism. Such an approach to life and community feeds the growing phenomenon of us against them. And it increases the sense of isolation that many people experience today. Whether the issue is health care or gun ownership, religious beliefs, or changing cultural values, our growing narcissism and rugged individualism is ripping our society apart. That kind of narcissism feeds an anger and a sense of disenfranchisement among many of us. And in turn, it allows compassion to be painted as an act of weakness, the opposite of rugged individualism. The reality is that communities can still be healthy even in the presence of rugged individualism. The problem is that the only way that this can happen is the presence of compassion. Without compassion, without the recognition of other people's basic human rights and dignities, you get folks who will fight to protect what they perceive to be their own personal rights without any regard to the impact, the cost that doing so will have on others. And that's a formula for anarchy. What we need to develop is a hermeneutic of love. In her book entitled Born Forward, Ceaselessly into Love, a theory of the hermeneutic of love exemplified by Martin Luther King Jr. I want to see the size of the cover for that book. Jennifer Seelig uses the teachings of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to show what a hermeneutic of love looks like in practice. And she also uses it to describe a theory of the hermeneutic of love. This is her loose definition of the hermeneutic of love. A way of interpreting experiences and people with love, through love, and for love. She goes on to talk about how King interprets with, through, and for love, utilizing the definition of agape love used by the Greeks. King actually talked a little bit about that in form of love in a sermon entitled Loving Your Enemies. He said, the Greek language comes out with another word for love. It is the word agape. And agape is more than eros. Agape is more than philia. Agape is something of the understanding, creative, redemptive goodwill for all men. And I'll just start substituting people for men. It is a love that seeks nothing in return. It is an overflowing love. That it's what theologians would call the love of God working in the lives of people. And when you rise to love on this level, you begin to love people. Not because they are likable, but because God loves them. You look at every person and you love them because you know God loves them. Even if he might be the worst person you've ever seen. Now the reality is, God doesn't need to be in the picture to make this work. As Vance's old bumper stick used to say, people can be good without God. Agape love can be entirely about a humanistic outlook on life, a valuing of all people, a recognition of the need for basic human dignity and rights. A hermeneutic of love, understanding what you experience in life through the constant filter of agape love may seem like an overly simplistic pie-in-the-sky idea, but I am here to tell you there is nothing simple about it. It takes hard work, dedication, constant vigilance, but I hope that our earlier consideration of the difficulty of having rugged individualism within communities points to why it is so important that we try. The good news is that practicing a hermeneutic of love necessarily opens us up to having a more global identity. As we recognize the basic human dignity and rights of people around the world. And if there's one thing that the world needs right now, well, in my opinion, it's exactly that. Speak your mind on the themes of global identity and a hermeneutic of love. Anyone want to share their thoughts?
Thank you, Mark. For me, this was a very important time to hear your sermon, but I'd like to tell you a story about something that I think is very positive. The World Series is going on right now. Maybe most of you are not aware of that, but it means a lot to me.
Of course you are.
And one of the Houston ball players made a very unkind gesture to a Japanese player that's on the Dodger team. And so the Major League organization took action, and they are suspending him next season for 8 games, and the Houston Astros are using his salary that he will not be paid to give to an organization or organizations that are working to do just what you said.
That's loving.
Isn't that a great story?
Good to see people working towards
and
that.
He wants to be a part of the program.
Yeah. Wow. That's very cool. Thanks for sharing that.
Are there others who want to share their thoughts down front here?
Hello, I'm Rebecca. You made a comment about people and the individualism and people wanting to exercise their rights. And you know, when everyone gets in that position, then it can be hard to have healthy community. And it reminds me of a passage in the book The Shack by William Paul Young. And it was one that that was very moving to me. But basically, there's a statement that you can't have rights and relationship at the same time. And so that's just something to sort of mull over. You know, at first it seems very alarming to think that, like, oh, well, my rights, you know. But then when you just really start to just peel that back and realize that every time you're exercising your rights, you're putting up a boundary between yourself and, you know, someone else. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, you know, if the person's abusive or what have you. It's just recognizing that that's a choice you're making every single time.
Great. So. Yeah, thank you for that.